번뇌가게 되지 마시기 바라. entrapped in the conditioned, and entrapped in the cycle of birth, death, old age, and disease in the material world. So now, having pointed out the living entity's situation, a very unfortunate situation in material existence, life after life, we're coming to the point where he is giving the way out, the option to go back to the spiritual world, to go back home, back to Godhead. And here it describes that those who are faithful, always hear the glories of the Supreme Personality of Godhead, etc., that they're eligible to see the Supreme Personality of Godhead face to face. So now, the personality of Godhead is understood by most cultures in the world that follow the religious principles, a bona fide system of religion. Most of them understand that the Lord lives in the spiritual world and he's also situated within everyone's heart. Most people have that understanding. So whether they're Christian, Muslim, etc., Judaism, you know, that common understanding is there. The Lord is in the heart, everyone's heart, he can hear the prayers, and he's also situated in the spiritual world. Thus the Lord, in one sense, is everywhere, and he also has a personal feature. Although the personal feature that the Lord is situated in the spiritual world, the kingdom of God, they call it the kingdom of God, but generally people have no idea what the kingdom of God is, and what God looks like, or even if he is a person. So for many years I was doing the interfaith forums, going way back to since about 1980, West Australia, South Australia, New South Wales, and Victoria. And so in all that time, I never really found anyone who had any faith or proper understanding that God is a person. And so in my general discussions with them, that they just didn't understand that. And in fact, some years back, as here in Victoria, I thought I would just ask them. And you know, there were the heads from Victoria and some of the states of the different religious organisations, Christian, a couple of different branches of Christianity, and Muslim, and Judaism, and then Buddhism. And I asked them, so there was about six or eight of them, I asked them, please, each one of you answer this question. In the is God, in his eternal situation, in the spiritual world, a person? It's a straight out question. All of them babbled on for a little bit, and most of them said, well, you know, can't really say, you know, one way or another. So none of them could just say, yes, God is a person. These are the heads of, you know, their selected as the people who will represent the teachings and answer the questions and what have you, and they had no idea. But, so, there's a general understanding that God exists in his spiritual kingdom. And for most of them, that's about as far as the knowledge goes. It's very vague whether God is a person. Therefore, we see that Michelangelo, I think it was, you know, in painting a picture in the famous chapel in Europe, painted God as a very old man. Now, of course, you know, we have pictures of the Lord in our temples, If someone painted a picture that in any way didn't reflect the characteristics of God, we wouldn't hang it in any of our temples. No matter how well it was painted, no matter who the painter was, even if it was Michelangelo himself, we wouldn't hang it. We wouldn't put it in our books, we wouldn't worship it. So, for that, for centuries, the acceptance that God is an old man, that he grows old, one of the conditions of material existence, it is not a condition of one who is eternal and unchangeable, that has been accepted. So there's very little, if any, knowledge of who God is. But this they tend to understand. God is situated within the heart of everyone. He hears everyone's prayers. They feel his presence. If they're following some bona fide practices of religion, then they get that sense. And that he's all-pervading everywhere. God is everything. God is love. There is some reciprocation we can have. Everything he's doing is good. And he exists somewhere in the spiritual kingdom, but they don't really know anything about that. That's the general situation in the world. We have a name for that personality of Godhead who is situated everywhere, within everyone's heart, within every atom. We call him Vishnu. Or Vasudeva. So that Vasudeva being referred to here, so it's the same personality of Godhead who is worshipped and understood, but here is describing that if one hears and chants about that personality of Godhead, his name, which is hallowed or spiritual, his form, his pastimes, his qualities, then one can, in fact, very quickly be able to come to a position where they can see God face to face. Now, of course, when we say see God face to face, that indicates that he has a face, that we have a face, and that, of course, his face is part of his spiritual body, which is eternal and ever fresh and never ages, has no bones, not a mechanical body like our body. So we can see him face to face with our spiritual senses, the senses of our spiritual self, which also has a form. And that process is by hearing about the Lord. Of course, generally, as we said, in most religious traditions, there's very little hearing and chanting because they don't know anything about God's form, his activities, his qualities, what he does in the spiritual world. All of those different things are unknown. So therefore, the hearing and chanting process is not taken up very much, if at all. But we see that in the Bhagavad Gita, in the 13th chapter. Pick it up in the exact page. That's all right. That's what it means. Of 700 verses. Come to that exact one. So this is 13:26. Anye tvam ajanta shudvam yivya upasate tepi chiditaranthiva vichyam shuddhi parayaha. Again, there are those who, although not conversant in spirit, spiritual knowledge, begin to worship the Supreme Person upon hearing about Him from others. Because of the tendency to hear from authorities, they also transcend the path of birth and death. So, and in a similar passage, a similar vein of thought, in the 6th chapter, this is one I prepared earlier, that's 31. It says that Sarva Bhutasya Tambya Mam Jiti Ekatvam Astita Sarvatarata Manopi Sayogi Mayivatate. Such a yogi who engages in the worshipful service of the super soul, Vasudeva, knowing that I, Krishna, and the super soul are one, remains always in me in all circumstances. So here, there's a little further information that Krishna is that personality of Godhead who appears in everyone's heart and is situated in the spiritual world as Bhagavan or the personality of Godhead. So that here in this verse, that Supreme Lord is identified as Krishna. And now it describes that there are many yogis, because in India, who meditate to try and see the Lord within their heart. So Prabhupada says in his purport, a yogi who is practicing meditation on the super soul sees within himself the plenary portion of Krishna as Vishnu, with four hands holding conch shell, wheel, club, and lotus flower. The yogi should know that Vishnu is not different from Krishna. Krishna, in this form of super soul, is situated in everyone's heart. Furthermore, there is no difference between the innumerable super souls present in the innumerable parts of all living entities. Nor is there a difference between a Krishna conscious person always engaged in the transcendental loving service of Krishna and a perfect yogi engaged in meditation on the super soul. The yogi in Krishna consciousness, even though he may be engaged in various activities while in material existence, remains always situated in Krishna. And as described in Bhakti Rasamrita Sindhu, a devotee of the Lord always acting in Krishna consciousness is automatically liberated. Then in the Narada Pancharatra, it says that by concentrating one's attention on the transcendental form of Krishna, who is all-pervading beyond time and space, one becomes absorbed in thinking of Krishna and then attains the happy state of transcendental association with Him. So then, by that state of absorbing oneself in thinking of Krishna, by one's cultivation of Krishna consciousness and by always hearing and chanting about Krishna, it says that one is always in the transcendental state of associating with Him, and it's face to face. It says further that Krishna consciousness is the highest stage of transcend yoga practice. So this hearing and chanting process, one is always absorbing in Krishna, that is an even higher and more intimate connection with the Supreme Lord and association with the Supreme Lord in an intimate, interactive, loving relationship. That is even greater than the yogis. And of course, you know, in one sense, There are many persons, you know, within Judaism, within Muslim religion, within Christianity, who, you know, try to practice their religion in such a way they go into a deep trance and try and connect with the Supreme or his representatives, such as Jesus, Muhammad, Mother Mary, like that. They try to go into deep trance, and they do that. They try and attain that. But he is describing that the process of engagement in devotional service of hearing and chanting, especially, is most intimately connects one with the Supreme. And we'll come back to that. This very understanding that Krishna is present as Paramatma in everyone's heart make the yogis faultless. And the Vedas, such as the Gopalita Tapanu Pancha, confirm this inconceivable potency of the Lord as follows. Although the Lord is one, he is present in innumerable hearts as many. And again, in the Matsya Purana, Vishnu is one and yet he is certainly all pervading. By his inconceivable potency, in spite of his one form, he is present everywhere as the sun appears in many places. So that this conception is a general conception that people have in most religions, that God is one, he exists somewhere in the spiritual kingdom. They don't know whether he's black or white, male, female, tall or short, or anything. Old or young, they have no, or whether he has two arms or a hand, they don't know that, but they know he's one, and yet he's also in everyone's heart. That very concept is there everywhere in all religions. And of course, that is the basic understanding, and this is the same teaching as presented in all the Vedas and presented in the Bhagavad Gita. And that personal Godhead, his one form is Krishna. Because when we say Krishna, Krishna actually means he who is all attractive and possesses all opulences, attractive opulences in full. God is the possessor of all opulences in full and perfection, and therefore he is attractive to everyone. One of the opulences of the personality of Godhead is beauty. And therefore, God must be beautiful. God cannot be the source of beauty and yet have no beauty himself. Therefore, we cannot depict God as an old man. Hair. If he has hair, it's certainly not grey. He certainly is a person who doesn't have control over his facial hair. So, if he's a possessor of beauty, he has to be beautiful. It makes more sense that God is Krishna than an old man. So, therefore, there's nothing contradictory in God being the most beautiful, attractive person, of which in the histories of this world, the only person who comes close to that is Krishna. So, there's nothing contradictory about God being Krishna. There's nothing controversial that actually fits everyone's convention. So, now, we'll come back to this point that yeah, it says that, that from the Narada Pancharatra, of course that's Narada Muni, he's speaking this verse in Bhagavatam, and he's also being quoted in the Narada Pancharatra that by concentrating one's attention on the form of Krishna, absorbing oneself in thinking of Krishna by the nine processes of devotional service, because all the different rules and regulations and processes have one goal, one should never forget the Supreme Lord, and one should always remember him. So those nine processes of devotional service are for that, and all processes of devotional service should be accompanied by Shravana, Kirtana, Smaran, hearing and chanting the voice of the Lord, and thus always in deep in samadhi, meditating on the Lord. And it says that if one follows that, in Krishna, and then attains a happy state of transcendental association with him. So this verse here is describing to Vachandari that by this process he can be eligible to see the personality of Godhead face to face. Again, that may seem like a long way off or something impossible. In the second chapter of the Bhagavad Gita, the last verse 72, Srila Prabhupada makes these wonderful, he summarizes the contents of the Gita, and he starts his, so the verse is, verse number 72, that is the way of spiritual and godly life, after attaining which a man is not rewarded. If one is thus situated, even at the hour of death, one can enter into the kingdom of God. In his purport, he says, one can attain Krishna consciousness or divine life at once, within a second, or one may not attain such a state of life even after millions of births. It is only a matter of understanding and accepting the fact. So how quickly one can attain this state of Krishna consciousness? 1 second, or after many millions of births? One, it's a matter of, what is the difference? That one accepts the facts as they are, but one doesn't. And until one does, that could take millions of births, millions of lifetimes. And then, in that purport, Prabhupada says, there is no difference between the kingdom of God and the devotional service of the Lord, since both of them are on the absolute plane to be engaged in the transcendental loving service of the Lord is to have attained the spiritual kingdom. And further down he, I'll read that last part of the paragraph. In the material world, there are activities of sense gratification, whereas in the spiritual world, there are activities of Krishna consciousness. Attainment of Krishna consciousness, even during this life, is immediate attainment of Brahman, spirit. And one who is situated in Krishna consciousness has certainly already entered into the kingdom of God. So this process of devotional service, as is being stated here in this verse, allows one to see the person of the Godhead face to face. And, you know, throughout the teachings of the Bhagavad Gita and the Srimad Bhagavatam, we understand that the Supreme Personality of Godhead is absolute. Krishna, even when he comes to this material world, he is always situated in his spiritual abode. And therefore, when one associates with the Lord through his name, his pastimes, his qualities, one is associated with the personality of Godhead, and if you associate with the personality of Godhead, you are situated in the spiritual world. Because Krishna is always in the spiritual world, even when he's here. So therefore, one is able to, and one who is faithful understands that, then they're, they can. So therefore, in this Krishna book, Srila Prabhupada explains, therefore, that.
How does one come to this position
of being always in association with the person of God, that one is never forgetting the Supreme Lord, and therefore the Lord is always keeps one's focus upon that devotee. Prabhupada mentions in the Krishna book that the pastimes of the Lord are generally heard and relished by liberated souls. So here the process given by Narada Muni is one should always hear and chant about Krishna. But we see that because we're conditioned, and even Prachinadari, because he was practicing religious principles under the modes of material nature, he also wasn't able to engage himself properly in hearing, shravan, kirtan, smaran. And we see that even when he practiced the religious system, if they're still under material culture predominantly, they can't take up this process, nor do they have any much attraction to it. Especially for people who kill animals, as mentioned in the Bhagavatam. We won't go into that. That's another class. But it is mentioned, especially the killers of animals, who are God's children. So that reduces their chances of engaging in this process of hearing and chanting about the personal body. Who has many names, of which Krishna is the most, is the prime name, because he is the Lord Chaitanya. So then, it says that, so it's for the liberated persons, and yet the descriptions of the pastimes of Lord Krishna are so attractive that they are relishable for all classes of men. Hearing the activities of Krishna, such engagement is pure spiritual activity. It is essential for persons who are actually liberated to hear about the pastimes of Krishna. That is the supreme relishable subject matter for one in the liberated state. So on the liberated platform, on the spiritual platform, one must be always engaged in that loving interaction with the Lord. And the loving interaction with the Lord is one is always thinking about the Lord, talking about the Lord, offering the Lord gifts and service. So it's a very, very practical sense. If you can't have a loving relationship with anyone in this world, whether it be your father, your mother, your uncle, your auntie, your children, your husband, your wife, you know, a friend, you can't have a loving relationship with anyone if you don't engage in some activities in relation to them, which primarily the six that you may share some food, offering, you may share some gifts. So you're offering some gifts, you're receiving something, and appreciating the gifts. You're revealing your mind and speaking in confidence and discussing about your particular activities in relationship to that person, about that person's relationship, you know, activities in relationship to you. Any relationship, let's take marriage for an example, it's a good example. There's a lot of discussion that goes on to keep the relationship going. You know, why did you do that? Why didn't you do that? What do you mean? Do you really care about that? You know, demonstrated it. There is so much discussion, so much interaction, and that relationship, that was wonderful that you did that for me. I can't believe that you think about me so much that you would do this for me. You know, if there's no discussion on the confidential activities and nature of the relationship, and there's no interaction of gifts, receiving and offering gifts, and sharing food. What is a relationship? If you get married to someone, you just sit there and look at each other. You look at each other, not a word, no offerings. Oh, I'm off to work, see you tonight, come home, sit there, look at each other. What is a relationship? So, this, there must be these loving relationships with the personality of Godhead. Also, there must be this devotional service, which is particularly prominent in hearing and chanting and, you know, full consciousness of the loving interaction. That must be there. So therefore, that's essential for liberated persons. If there is no interaction with the personality of Godhead, then what is the relationship? It's essential that there must be interaction. So then, now Prabhupada comes to what about others? As we've heard in the Bhagavad Gita. Also, if persons who are trying to be liberated hear such narrations as the Bhagavad Gita and Srimad Bhagavatam, then their path of liberation becomes very clear. The Bhagavad Gita is the preliminary study of Srimad Bhagavatam. By studying the Gita, one becomes fully conscious of the position of Lord Krishna. And when he is situated at the lotus feet of Krishna, he understands in the narrations of Krishna as described in Srimad Bhagavatam. Therefore, Lord Chaitanya therefore advised his followers that their business is to propagate Krishna Katha. Krishna Katha means narrations about Krishna. There are two Krishna Kathas, narrations spoken by Krishna and narrations spoken about Krishna. The Bhagavad Gita is the narration or the philosophy on the science of God spoken by Krishna himself. And Srimad Bhagavatam is a narration about the activities and transcendental pastimes of Krishna, both Krishna Katha. It is the order of Lord Chaitanya that Krishna Katha should be spread all over the world, because if the conditioned souls suffering under the pains of material existence take to Krishna Katha, then their path of liberation will be open and clear. So this Krishna Katha, although it's essential for liberated persons, but also it is also meant for those who are conditioned, because it helps them to gradually understand the nature of the Lord, our nature as the Lord's servant, the process of devotional service, the process of interaction. And by coming to that platform, then one can take the graduate and postgraduate sort of activities, loving activities, as mentioned in Srimad Bhagavatam, and have this constant interaction, loving interaction with the personality of Godhead, and always feel his presence in a face-to-face manner. So, now Prabhupada said, generally persons who are conditioned are not particularly interested in hearing, you know, in religious discussions or hearing and chanting about Krishna, the personality of Godhead. And yet, Prabhupada says that these narrations of Krishna particularly are very attractive even for the conditioned souls. So he explains this, that in this introduction to the Krishna book, he says that this Krishna Katha will also be very much appealing to the materialistic persons, because Krishna's pastimes with the gopis, cowherd girls, are exactly like the loving affairs between young girls and boys within this material world. So that's the whole world is going on that platform of this, young couples being very much attracted to their romantic pastimes. Actually, the sex feeling found in human society is not unnatural, because the same sex feeling is there in the original personality of Godhead. The pleasure potency is called Srimati Radharani. So often people ask, who's that girl? standing next to Krishna. That is Radharani, that is the Lord's spiritual potency, His own internal spiritual pleasure potency. The attraction of loving affairs on the basis of sex feeling is the original feature of the Supreme Personality of Godhead, and we, the conditioned souls, being part and parcel of the Supreme, have such feelings also, but they experience within a perverted, minute condition. Therefore, when those who are after sex life in this material world hear about Krishna's pastimes with the gopis, they will relish transcendental pleasure, although it appears to be materialistic. The advantage will be that they will gradually be elevated to the spiritual platform. So because they're associating with the Lord and His activities under proper guidance, hearing and chanting under proper authorities, that have been discussed, and that's been discussed in previous years, then when they hear and chant in that way, they can understand that the activities of the Lord are the original sex attraction or the original pure loving spiritual pastimes, which we experience in the material world as a perverted sort of love in a very limited, minute way. So then Prabhupada says, in the Bhagavad Gita, it is stated that if one hears the pastimes of Lord Krishna with the gopis from authorities with submission, so one should hear, you know, when we're talking about the activities of Krishna and Radharani, the authorities, those speaking that subject matter, even if they're speaking to conditioned souls, they'll say, when I'm speaking of Krishna, I mean God. When I'm speaking of Radharani, I mean God's spiritual energy. I'm not talking about just an ordinary materialistic couple. If one challenges that, there is no God, or you know what have you, then the conversation on that matter ends there. But if someone can say, well, let me just hypothetically or theoretically accept that, okay, that's the premise on which we're speaking, and let me hear from there. And if I like that. So if that goes on, then it says, then he will be promoted to the platform of transcendental loving service to the Lord. So then they will hear, oh, I now have faith. I want to do this devotional service that's mentioned. I want to do what the devotees are doing. That faith will manifest. And I'll take up that devotional service under, you know, the spiritual master. And the material disease of lust within his heart will be completely vanquished. In other words, after such hearing will counteract materialistic sex life. So, therefore, here Narada Muni is presenting this process both for the liberated persons and for the conditioned souls. It is eligible, it is for everyone, and it is so potent because through that one personally connects with the all-attractive personality of Godhead, and that all-attractive spiritual taste overrides one's attraction to sex life, which is basically the shackles of material existence. So in the prisons, there are the shackles of bars and walls, but in the material world, the shackles are our attraction to sex life. That will keep us here. We will want to stay here. In fact, you know, you sometimes see in the, you know, different car bumper stickers, but basically people have the opinion that I don't want to go to the spiritual world because it's boring. You know, if you want to have, you know, sex life and party and stuff like that, stay here in the material world. They don't want to. Actually, they're criminals. What are they called? Recidivists. They commit crimes, and they could commit the same crimes again and again. And sometimes they get released from prison, and they go out and immediately commit a crime so they can get back in. Because they're actually, you know, attached to that, even being in prison. Yeah, there's a, so this brings one, you know, to this. So now here in the translation, Srila Prabhupada says that, in the translation, Radha Muni is saying, one who is faithful, who is always hearing the voice of the Supreme Personality Godhead, who is always engaged in the culture of Krishna consciousness and in hearing the Lord's activities, very soon becomes eligible to see the Lord's Supreme Personality Godhead face to face. So this culture of Krishna consciousness, in the Bhagavad Gita, Prabhupada makes this wonderful statement. This is in text number one. So, this is describing the how Krishna consciousness is spoken by Krishna, this science, and it comes down in a succession of great saintly persons who are also great rulers of the world. Because it is their duty that the entire population will, you know, take up this Krishna consciousness, which is the only way that one can actually understanding the personality of Godhead of revelation. So, in the purport, Srila Prabhupada says, the kings of all planets are especially meant for protection of the inhabitants, and therefore, the royal order should understand the science of Bhagavad Gita in order to be able to rule the citizens and protect them from material bondage to lust. Alright, so this shackles of sex life. Human life is meant for cultivation of spiritual knowledge in eternal relationship with the Supreme Personality of Godhead, and the executive heads of all states and all planets are obliged to impart this lesson to the citizens by education, culture, and devotion. Really like that statement. So, you know, this, and this is, of course, you know, the Krishna consciousness movement. We're also meant to, because the governments haven't taken up yet, we're doing it for them. So, therefore, those who take up Krishna consciousness, they're above, or should be, transcendental to the all the Brahmins and Ashrams. They don't identify themselves as a Brahmin, Kshatriya, Vaishya, you know, Sannyas. They don't identify ourselves as a servant of Krishna. But, for the service of Krishna, a devotee will engage in any activity as a Kshatriya, as a Vaishnava, as a Sudra. But if something has to be done, they'll do it. So we're doing the work of Kshatriyas as well. We're doing the work of the rulers. That by education, culture, and devotion, propagating that, we're trying to spread Krishna consciousness. But it actually should be coming from the top. So this education, of course, this knowledge, transcendental knowledge, is being imparted in books like Bhagavad Gita, preliminary study, advanced study, Srimad Bhagavatam, Chaitanya Charitamrita, and Nectar Devotion. Devotion, that science of Shravanam, Kirtanam, hearing and chanting, to always performing one's activity by hearing and chanting. Here, you know, it describes in the translation of Srimad Bhagavatam culture of Krishna consciousness. In one way, we can take the culture of Krishna consciousness as cultivating this practice of hearing and chanting and you know, performing devotional service and worshipping the deity. But also, Prabhupada is mentioning here culture in a more broad sense. That in order to hear and chant, as we said in general, one, those who especially people who eat meat, who kill animals, who are responsible for killing animals, because if you eat meat, you're responsible for killing animals. That culture, the culture of being a meat eater, is not conducive to loving every one of God's children. I love you, God, and I'm not going to eat too many of your children. Just a few of that. So, it's not conducive. The culture of intoxication. So what one eats is very important. The culture of intoxication, that is also, one is just already, one is bewildered, forgetting one's eternal relationship with the Supreme Lord, but then to become intoxicated. And of course currently, I think sales of intoxication have gone up, 40, 50, 60, 70%. Because, generally, people are so addicted to bad habits that when they go to work, it helps them to, at least while I'm at work, because I'll get the sack, lose my job, can't pay my mortgage, look after my family, at least I'll behave myself. As soon as I get home, or even on the way home, I'm going to have a drink. So, of course, these days, people are so addicted to drinking that they'll drink even while they're driving. So now there's laws. There never used to be laws, but now there's laws. You can't drink. You can't get drunk while you're driving. Oh, but I want to. No, you can't. You people are dying. I knew this elderly person. He was a war veteran. But he told me, he said, he'll go down to the hotel and he'll drink as much as he can, and then he says he puts the car into automatically pilot and drives home. Now, there is no automatic pilot in a car. So, if one can't even focus on the fact that they're driving a car that could kill, and they could kill themselves and kill others, how are they going to focus on the postgraduate, intimate, they can't even relate to another living on the street that I might kill you. How are they going to relate to God? So, intoxication, gambling, and illicit sex that we described, which is basically a shackle. So, the culture of Krishna consciousness means to follow different principles, eating fish and eggs and foods and that are aphrodisiacs and garlic and onions, people often say, why don't you eat garlic and onions? Because they're aphrodisiacs, they stimulate the senses in the wrong way. And the culture of Krishna consciousness, also is that, these are the four pillars. If one, you can follow that culture, one's hearing and chanting will really be, by the grace of the Lord, have a greater ability to, enter into this process that on a daily basis, the focus of one's mind is not on the senses. It's actually on the soul and the personality of Godhead. And then, there are more refined cultures that, as we said, one may be thinking, I'd like to offer some gifts to God because He is always so kind, He's maintaining my existence and protecting me. And, so what gift, what do you offer a gift to someone who has everything? You offer love. So know, as a gesture of love, you can offer a little flower that's common to everyone. And always surprises me, even with people who have worshipped the Lord and their families for thousands of years, and if you go to their home, they never have flowers. There are very few people who grow flowers. So, it's a culture. There are cultural aspects growing flowers, cooking foods, cooking nice food, learning how to cook properly, and offering that to the Lord. The nice interactions between husband and wife, between parents and children, between friends. These activities are very conducive to Krishna consciousness. Actually, in the early days of Krishna consciousness, a lot of mistakes were made because there was a strong emphasis on chanting 16 rounds, a single Krishna. But the culture the interaction between devotees as they went about their activity. So it was almost, in some places, if you were a grihastha living outside of the temple, it was almost like you weren't really devotee. You're either in the temple or you're not, sort of thing, in some places. So, and therefore many devotees, grihasthas, not that we had a lot, the few that we did have, many lived right close next door or in the temple. The culture of Krishna consciousness, of course, also means that for the process of hearing and chanting and thinking of Krishna, family life, which is the basic activities of 99% of devotees now and in the future, will be in families. And that is recommended by Srivatavinoda Kaurmacharya. So family life in Kali Yuga is a very stable position. And then the interaction between the families and the brahmacharis and the brahmacharinis and the sannyasis, the families who actually treat brahmacharis, brahmacharinis, and sannyasis almost like children in one sense, that they look after them. They make sure that they always have their requirements as well. So that's culture. So a lot of these things we're sort of beginning to implement to some degree. So, we're getting different departments to look after that, so in infancy stage, but that should be rock solid culture, because it actually, so these are more refined, so from the, basically following the four regular principles, there's a lot more to culture than, are you following the four regular principles, but the way Prabhupada presents that in the Bhagavad Gita, that the disciplic succession presents this Krishna consciousness movement by education, by culture, and by devotion. That is what we are presenting. That is what ISKCON is supposed to be presenting. So there are many, many different aspects of that culture, and when that is not there, and therefore we see that, that culture is a real safety net. That's one of the things that I personally have noticed, that because, in the West really they don't have a culture. There's tomato sauce and football and a couple of other things. In other words, we've made a culture of not having a culture. And places like Europe. In places like Europe, in
Places like France, and that,
you know, they didn't have baths. You know, they just had perfume and wigs. You know, many people in civilized aristocratic societies didn't bathe very much, or and things like that. You know, so there's not a lot of culture in the West, in Europe, what have you. But with the you know, Prabhupada wanted to unite the East and the West, because you know that culture is there in the East, thousands of years, wonderful culture, and that culture is a great foundation for hearing and chanting. So in other words, sometimes people have some difficulty, they lose their attraction, they're hearing and chanting about Krishna. Maybe they've committed offences, or maybe they've seen so many others committing offences or behaving badly. You know, when there's no proper kapala culture, is the devotees are hearing and chanting and they're developing good qualities. Sometimes, the younger, more beginning that the devotee is, when they see devotees behaving badly, if there's some difficulty, then the difficulty and the combination of seeing devotees behaving badly, they can just fall away. But if there's a strong culture, that the interactions and the qualities of the devotees are very, very nice, that even if they lose their, somehow their spiritual bearing of always cultivating Krishna consciousness rather than keeping them smiling, they're still very attractive. There's a nice, interaction between the devotees, and they're very attracted to the qualities of the devotees, and the devotees are very caring for each other. If that is not there, then it's much more dangerous. So this and that's what one thing we do get from this combination between the from India, where the culture is there. It's called the Punya Bhumi, the land of piety. One has practiced culture and religious life or spiritual life for many, many lifetimes, and therefore one takes birth in India. And some of the common concepts of Bhagavad Gita, just as Prabhupada said, you just scratch a little beneath the skin and you see that in India, Krishna consciousness can come out very, very easily. So here, this verse, Narada Muni is explaining that as he says, who is always engaged in the culture of Krishna consciousness and in hearing of the Lord's activities. So that culture of Krishna consciousness we can take in two ways. One, you're actually cultivating your spiritual life, and the other is the culture of Krishna consciousness, means the four regular principles, the good qualities that devotees are supposed to have, the caring relationships between devotees, the proper family life, proper relationships all around, earning an occupation in a way that is very conducive, very very helpful to one's Krishna consciousness, being able to think of Krishna, and at the same time, one's occupation is, one earns in such a way that they're always stable. The devotee always tries to, they don't do anything to, make their platform, that if they want to perform the usual daily activities of hearing and chanting and what have you, but somehow they've made arrangements by which their life becomes turned upside down. So devotees are very, very careful about that. The type of, financial, that is also part of the culture. What are you doing with finances? You know, there are instances in the Chaitanya Charitamrita where a devotee, due to their financial misbehavior, cut himself in a real predicament. And they asked him, the Lord, oh, you help such and such. The devotees had to come and help him. But You know, all of this is part of the culture. The devotees arrange their life in such a way that they can just go on daily and cultivate Krishna consciousness, because their culture as a society, as a temple, as a family is supportive. And Krishna's pastimes, these pastimes, as we said, even materials, but they're so attractive that gradually, if one, you know, hears and chants, the more one hears and chants, the more one becomes, as Prabhupada said, it's like the attraction between a young, you know, couple. They can't stop thinking about each other. And as one hears and chants about Krishna, it's like that. I just got to hear more. Yeah, I've got to make some more time, and I don't want to do anything that's going to disrupt that. And I was thinking about that, you know, this morning. When I read the Bhagavad Gita before I ever met a devotee, and I was very, very much attracted to it. So much so, I used to go and camp in the woods with a bag of muesli and a bit of water, a bit of powdered milk, and I'd just read the Bhagavad Gita, and then I found the Nectar Devotion, and I was reading the Nectar Devotion. And I was just so attracted, so I just didn't want anyone to disturb me. I didn't want anyone to disturb that reading process. And I just, you know, from morning to night, I just read that book. And of course, you know, when I met the devotees, I realized, gee, I've got so many books, you know, I'm joining. And so when I used to have, you know, breakfast, from the very beginning, I'd eat really quick, so that I'd have a little time before breakfast, a little time after breakfast, because I was just so, you know, the scriptures are so attractive. You know, the more you hear about Krishna, you hear something about Krishna, you think, that is so wonderful. And then, you know, and then you hear something and you think, that is even more wonderful. And then it mentions something else, you go, I've got to know about that. What was that pastime? I've got to find that. So, the more one actually takes up the process, you know, there's nothing like hearing and chanting in this world. At the moment, currently around the world, there's a bit of a crisis. People are trying to find something to do. They're doing crazy stuff, you know. They all want attention. Look at me, look at me. Look at the silly thing I'm doing. But actually, if they had this opportunity, you know, to hear and chant, they had taken this up and they had the opportunity, they'd be in their homes now, they'd be chanting, they'd be kirtan, they'd be reading Krishna pastimes, they'd be online talking to other devotees, they'd be, you know, exchanging recipes, you know, how do you make this, how do you make that nice curd sabji, and, you know, and showing each other the deity all around the world. People would be thinking, I want this, you know, don't even stop this lockdown. This is wonderful. Like that. Now, people are saying, look, I've been locked up for 2 weeks. It means they're in my home. They're not in jail or anything. And, you know, okay, I want to get out. I don't care if I'm going to die. I don't care if my family's going to die. I've got to get out of this house. You know, they're going crazy. There's a great risk. And people are saying, let me out, let me out. I've got nothing to do, I'm going crazy inside. But for one who, you know, if they, you know, my recommendation is, please, start with the Bhagavad Gita, get into the Srimad Bhagavatam, do some kirtan, associate with the devotees, cook some nice prasad for your family, get out in the garden, grow some flowers for Krishna, you know, decorate the deities, clean the home, so many things. You know, 18 months have passed like that. If it is 18 months, but it could be a long time. Let's hope this all finishes in a couple of days. It's a very difficult situation for many people, and of course, you know, people are getting very sick and people are dying, so we offer our prayers for everything in this world. But on another platform, certainly there's unlimited, you know, one can feel that they're actually in the presence of the person under the Godhead immediately. They actually take up the process of devotional service, and then they'll not be sort of desperate to get out of their house they'll be desperate, they'll be thinking, you know, here I am with the personality of God, and I'm experiencing, you know, ever fresh bliss on a daily basis. So this is the contribution to the Krishna Consciousness Movement, and I'll just leave it there if anyone has any questions or comments.
Just trying to understand the process of the approach of Narada Muni towards Prachinavarti. Since Prachinavarti Maharaj was practicing the Karmakanda, and is based on the Vedic prescriptions, understanding as well that the injunctions of the Vedics, the Vedas, basically it's like a gradual progress of the living entity towards the spirituality. So can we understand that the practice that Prachinavarti Maharaj was engaged qualify him to access to now encounter with his spiritual master and be enlightened with this process of hearing, continuing that this high level of spirituality? It's the product of his previous engagement, and it's just because his mercy of his spiritual master, in this case, Narada Muni.
That's a good question. So, you're asking that Prachinavarti was engaged in Karmakanda, so it's like religious activities, but very material. What's that?
Authorized by the Vedic injunctions.
Yeah, they follow the Vedic injunctions, but there's a lot of materialistic considerations in one of them. So, yes, all of the Vedic injunctions done properly in proper guidance purify one and bring one, they're conducive. They bring one to the point where it's favourable, so that when the opportunity to associate with a devotee, such as Narada Muni, comes along by the mercy of the Lord, the mercy of the devotee, that's not a karmic destiny, but the opportunity may be given. The devotees, they go out of their way to try and find everyone. So it's not that those persons will automatically come in contact with the devotee because they're doing karma kanda or some materialistic type of religious following. But the devotees themselves, they're going out of their way to come in contact with them. So the contact is being initiated by the mercy of the devotee. Prabhupada explains that in the Bhagavad Gita, in the third chapter, he says, verse 29. So Krishna says, bewildered by the modes of material nature, the ignorant fully engage themselves in material activities and become attached. And that includes religious activities which are predominantly materially based. But the wise should not unsettle them, although these duties are inferior due to the performer's lack of knowledge. So then in the purport, Prabhupada says, men who are ignorant cannot appreciate activities in Krishna consciousness, and therefore Lord Krishna advises us not to disturb them and simply waste valuable time. So, Prachinavarti, and persons even without the culture of Prachinavarti, they cannot appreciate Krishna consciousness. And therefore, therefore they may be critical, dismissive, so sometimes disrespectful. Basically, they just avoid it. Now, Prabhupada says, but the devotees of the Lord are more kind than the Lord because they understand the purpose of the Lord. Consequently, they undertake all kinds of risks, even to the point of approaching ignorant men to try and engage them in the acts of Krishna consciousness, which are absolutely necessary for the human being. So the devotee understands, the Lord's saying, even at the end of the Gita, Krishna says, don't explain this to people who are envious or not austere, you know, which means they're taking intoxication, you know, eating meat, again. Don't explain Gita to them. You know, and here, a similar thing. But Prabhupada has mentioned, because this is recited in the Chaitanya Charitamrita, and even if you take the verse that we just read, Krishna says himself in the 13th chapter that, you know, even persons, conditioned, material persons, if they hear, they can come to this platform of Krishna consciousness. So he's saying, if they hear, they can come. And at the other times he's saying, don't speak to them. So he's saying the two things. But we understand that the whole purpose of the Gita is that Krishna appeared to bring people back to the spiritual world. That's what he really wants. More so than not speaking to them because they, you know, they're not interested. More than anything, he wants his children to come back to the spiritual world. That is the main thing he wants. And therefore the devotees follow. Well, that's the more that you want, that's what we're going to do. And we're going to take the risk. It's our risk. You know, you're saying it's a risky business because they're not interested. That's okay. We'll take that risk. We'll take that dividend. So it's not that Pratyanabhari is automatically going to come to that platform. But all of those Vedic processes, from processes for those in Tamaguna, for processes for those in Rajaguna, processes in Sattaguna, in the Bhagavad Gita, in the 4th chapter, Krishna says they're all purifying and they remove sinful reaction. And by that process, one who comes into contact with a devotee in that more purified state, there's, you know, the chance, you know, they can either accept what the devotee is saying or not. But all of those purifying processes are trying to bring them to the point where they're in a more likely position where they'll be respectful and at least hear.
Yeah. Would it be correct to say that, for example, for Pratyanavari Maharaj, many factors facilitate Navi's encounter and access of encountering with the spiritual master like Narada Muni, and also receiving that process? For example, his sons, the Prachetas, were engaged in hostilities and regarding Ayam, means Roshiva, he gave them. Authorize a higher level of spirituality, and the effects of that, because they are the sense, the benefit of being engaged in emotional service, also benefit to the family members.
That's right.
I receive all the time, a person that has been instructed, if I'm engaged in emotional service, the benefit of that will also grant it to 10 generations in the past and in the future. Can we also understand that because the Prachetas were engaged in high level of spirituality, the benefit also went to Prachinavari Maharaj to qualify to access to this higher spiritual process?
Yes, that's right. That when the devotee is helping people to, you know, hear a little bit about Krishna, and process of devotional service, that some of the people that they come across, you know, show no interest, and some of the people that they come across may accept and, you know, hear. And of course, they do have family members and they do have friends, and it's natural that although a person is not particularly interested Krishna consciousness, even if it was presented to them. But if another family member or a friend, etc., takes that Krishna consciousness, then because they're interested in that person, just in a material way, they may take up Krishna consciousness also. Yeah, that's about it. And the other thing is that, of course, you know, naturally when a person becomes, realizes that, you know, by this Krishna consciousness you can experience this transcendental blissful life and become free from the miseries of material existence and go back to Godhead, they're always thinking about their relatives and their friends, not according to materialistic blood relationships sort of thing, but naturally there's a natural affection for them, and because they're thinking about them, then Krishna also thinks about them. So if a devotee thinks, oh, you know, I had, you know, my brother, my sister, you know, my mother, you know, she's not very interested, I wish she was, then Krishna, because the devotee is thinking about that person, then, as it says, you know, then, because Krishna is always thinking of his devotee, you know, the devotee is always pleasing Krishna, and Krishna is looking for the opportunity, I want to please my devotee. What does my devotee want? The devotee is saying, I don't want anything for myself, but they're thinking, I wish my, this relative or friend could become, so Krishna makes some arrangement. So yeah, it does. It benefits. So otherwise, people by their religious activities under the, you know, which basically somewhat materially covered. In other words, they don't really know anything about God, and they don't know how to interact with the devotional service, and a lot of the, you know, spiritual activities are very vague. Or centered around even the politics in this world. You know, to speak of other materialistic people with no religious principles, none of them will automatically, by their austerities, their cultivation of knowledge, or their moral principles of this world, none of that will actually guarantee that one will become a devotee on the transcendental platform. It does not produce that result, none of those activities. But it is purifying, you know, the certain activities, moral, religious principles are purifying, and they give one a better chance to accept. There's no guarantee they will accept, you know, to hear nicely from the devotee and follow their footsteps. So, therefore, it's not their karma, it's not their destiny necessarily. The only reason that it is destined that a devotee may come into contact with another devotee who begin the process is because they've done devotional service in a previous life, and therefore they're guaranteed to again get association and take off where they left off. Those persons are, that is a spiritual arrangement made by the Lord so that they can continue where they left off on the spiritual platform, but it has nothing to do with their cultivation of knowledge, austerities, or moral principles.
If you're going to be another question, it's regarding aligned to what we were studying here, and the point, the principle of because we forget Krishna, we get entangled with the influence of material nature and the bodily conception of life. So you also mentioned about the Varnashrama as a means to offer, to be engaged or be practical in devotional service, the validity of
it's a culture that supports Krishna consciousness. Yes.
And the validity of that, because they use in devotional service for Krishna's pleasure.
Mm-hmm.
That point was quite insightful for me.
Mm-hmm.
And can we say that the medium and the end of Krishna consciousness is like the medium, the way how we, the process, but at the same time as the goal? Can we relate and connect it in that way?
Connect the Varnashrama?
The use of Varnashrama, because Varnashrama also is a gradual process, means a process in Krishna consciousness, but at the same time, the end or the goal, because we use them as an instrument in the consciousness for the Krishna expression.
So, if elements of Varnashrama, dham, that culture of four social orders and four spiritual orders, if aspects of that is conducive to our Krishna conscious, then we accept it. And if it's not, we reject it. Now, we come in a line from Brahma, Vyas, gradually down to Madhvacharya, like that, and then gradually Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, who's Krishna himself. So, although we're in the cyclic succession from Madhva, Madhva, who existed before Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, you know, before Chaitanya Mahaprabhu enlightened the world about this Shravana, Kirtana, Smarana, hearing and chanting and remembering the pastimes of the Lord as the principal meaning of Krishna consciousness. So Madhvacharya, his teaching was mostly based upon people following the Varna Shravana system as the main process of liberation. But Lord Chaitanya taught us we're not interested in liberation. We're interested in love of God, which is the fifth goal of life. So the Varna Shravana institution awards the four goals of life: the ability to perform religious activities, activities which are not sinful and pleasing to God as we go about our material activities. That's religious activities in the Varna Shravana. It allows us to develop economic development so that society and families go on, and then we can enjoy life in that situation and ultimately attain liberation. And liberation means one can go to the impersonal Brahmajyoti or can go to Vaikuntha. Above that, so one can go to Vaikuntha with, you know, having a strong attachment to the Lord and being sinless, and being detached from this material world, and desiring to have a relationship with the Lord. You know, there is an aspect of love of God. But one can go to Vaikuntha where the concept of liberation is perhaps more significant than the aspect of love of God. Although it's there. Lord Chaitanya is giving something different. He's saying, so above Varnasrama, which is offering those four, we're only interested in the fifth goal of life, which is love of God. Therefore, Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu said to Madhvacharya, said to the followers of Madhvacharya when he was discussing with them, that that aspect of Varna Shravana, although it is good because it is a wonderful support for spiritual life, but it is remains a little external. And this, to develop one's love of God, one doesn't develop one's love of God by practicing Varna Shravana. One develops the ability gradually to get liberated and go back to the Vaikuntha. To practice love, to develop love of God, one must practice Shravanam, Kirtanam, Smaranam, hearing, chanting, remembering, etc. That's how you practice love of God. And therefore, if one becomes too enamored by the activities of the Varna Shravana and reduces one's hearing and chanting about the Lord, one may actually hamper one's cultivation of the love of God, the culture of Krishna consciousness. So the culture of Krishna consciousness is both, so for those, you know, for those who want to develop their pure love of God, that's their prime and only goal, Shravan, Kirtan, Smaran, hearing, chanting, remembering. For those, that It's not, they're not on that platform, but they want to, they're attracted to Krishna, and they want to go to the spiritual world, and they don't have developed their love of God very sufficiently. That Dharmasrana platform is a real solid basis by where they can, you know, still associate devotees. And even if they're having difficulty on the spiritual platform, they sort of remain stable. They don't go away and fall down to sinful activities and things like that. So it keeps them stable, a little time pass, and then again, they're a little interested in the spiritual life like that. The devotees who are interested in hearing and chanting and remembering the Lord, even if there's no Dharmasrana practices, they're stable because they're absolutely enjoying the bliss of that loving interaction. They don't need a Dharmasrana platform because they have the platform of love of God. And that is a taste that you cannot get with any other activity. So they don't necessarily need it. But the vast members of people who come to Krishna consciousness needs, you know, some of the activities which, you know, in this day and age, it's the minimum, such as marriage. Avoiding illicit sex, avoiding intoxication, you know. They're all aspects of Dharmasrana. You know, those principles of no gambling, intoxication, they're all aspects of it. So we take the essence of it, plus, as we were saying, you know, proper relationship between people, developing good practices, proper activities in economic development, proper activities of the government, etc. So, you know, all of those activities of Dharmasrana, or religious, you know, institutions are very helpful for those who aren't quite on the platform of love of God is my only goal of life. So very helpful for them. But for one on that platform, they don't need it. And I'll select Dharmasrana as a preaching tool, you know, encouraging people to do this, that and the other. So for preaching. And they'll practice it themselves in order that they're not just saying do this, but they'll show people do as I'm doing. But they don't need to do such and such. So you know, there is a connection between Dharmasrana and the nine principles of devotional service, but they're not exactly on the same platform. One, Dharmasrana is considered a little external, and this process of bhakti is, you know, really the heart and soul of devotees. And that's all they need if they practice it properly. Yeah? Okay. Should I go to the key?
Yeah.